The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we wound up a discussion of the flatworms. We talked about the planarians and the flukes and the tapeworms, and had made a number of comments about them, that although they belong to the same phylum, they're very different. There's no relationship between them. We don't have any common ancestors for them. We made the same point when we looked at each of the individual organisms, particularly the flukes and the tapeworms. There is no common ancestor available for all of the flukes or for all of the tapeworms. And I'm simply attempting to remind our listeners that when an individual attempts to follow the idea of evolution consistently, it becomes apparent very quickly that there is simply not evidence that would make that argument persuasive. I am not intending to go through a lengthy discussion of all of the invertebrate groups, but there are some that are probably worth mentioning yet. The next category of invertebrates are generally referred to as pseudo coelomates, false coelom. Now, the word coelom simply refers to a body cavity, and pseudo simply means false. And these organisms have a cavity. None of the organisms up to this point has, so this is a first in our discussion of the organisms. But it is false by virtue of the fact that the cavity is not lined with mesoderm. In your human body, you have a cavity that contains a body cavity that contains all of the internal organs, and lining that cavity is a layer of mesoderm. This layer is not present in the pseudocoelomates. There are a number of phyla that are here. These are minor phyla: Rotifera, Gastrotricha, Kenarincha, Priapulida, Nematomorpha, Acanthocephala, Entoprocta, and so on. Those need not concern you, except again to be aware that there are whole varieties of organisms that are interesting, unusual, not particularly important because there are not a lot of them, they're not food, they don't cause problems, etc. But if you're interested in biology, then you might find yourself immensely interested in these kinds of things. Now, what I would like to spend a little bit of time on is the phylum Nematoda. The phylum Nematoda are the roundworms, and they include what is probably one of the most important human parasites here in our own country. There are a variety of roundworms, some small, some big. The human roundworm often gets up to 8, 10, 12 inches long. If you are infested with these things, then you have worms this long in your intestinal tract. I taught in nursing down at the Anderson Memorial Hospital years ago, and I remember one of the nurses had come in one morning and was still shaken up. She'd gone to change her baby boy's diaper and found this long white thing thrashing around in the diaper. Well, I would expect that would get your attention, particularly if you didn't know what it was. So some of these things are fairly sizable. Many of them are very, very small. Generally, parasites are not capable of making their way through an unbroken skin. A few. There are a couple of bacteria that can do this, but not many of them. There is one roundworm in particular, the hookworm, which actually has the ability to chew its way through the skin. You would pick these things up on beaches that are infested with the hookworms. This is one reason it's a good idea when you go to the beach to be sure you're lying on a blanket rather than directly on the sand. But this is one of the parasites that is attracted to heat, and as soon as it gets to your skin, it can actually chew its way in and begin to infect your body. This one goes around through the body, so it's not an infestation, and it can be very difficult. It can be difficult to get rid of, and so on. There are some of these that are more troublesome than dangerous. Pinworms come to mind. Sometimes you'll find in elementary school children that are infected with pinworms. Very difficult to get rid of. The adult worms will come out of the anus at night and apparently cause an itch. And when children itch, they scratch. And they scratch with their fingers, and the next thing, that gets popped into their mouth so they can reinfect themselves this way. The eggs are very tiny. They can be carried in the air, so that often when, if a child becomes infected, then the whole family will become infected as well. The one that I want to spend some time on, the Ascaris, that's the human roundworm. These are the big things. But I want to talk a little bit about the Trichina worm, the Trichinella spiralis. It is my opinion that this parasite is probably the most important parasite in our own country and probably in many developed nations, for the simple reason that the presence of it in the body can be misdiagnosed. An individual would pick up this worm most likely in improperly prepared pork. This is not an argument for folks not to eat pork, for reasons we'll talk about shortly. It is an argument, one, to be sure of where your pork has come from, and two, to be sure that if the source is uncertain, be sure that you cook it sufficiently so that you would render any of the parasites that might be there unable to infect the body. Once it's eaten, the larvae of this organism will wander around through the body, often ending up in parts of the body where there are high blood rates of blood flow. Muscles, an obvious example of this. And I was interested in the comment in our parasitology book about how, I think it was a research that was done down in New Orleans, and how they had been studying the rate of infection of Trichina there in New Orleans. And the thing that got my attention was they'd given some number of cases that were studied, but the comment was that the worm had been detected only by digestion of the diaphragm, the muscle that separates your chest and abdominal cavity, obviously after the person was dead. Now, post-mortem is not really a good way to find out about parasites. And because these worms can be found in so many different places, they can mimic all kinds of things. They can mimic TB, for example, or certain types of heart trouble, or all sorts of things. And I suspect that most doctors simply don't consider the possibility that the condition that some folks die of is actually this parasite, rather than ascribing it to one of the other things that we see occurring rather commonly. There are some folks who cook pork until it's almost inedible. Many people are protected simply by virtue of the fact, I know my wife, for example, will buy pork often on sale, and then she'll put it in the freezer, and it will be some weeks, or in some cases maybe some months, before we eat it. Now, the presence of that in the freezer is going to render the parasites, if there are any there, non-viable. I still recall an experience that occurred to me in the dining common here years and years ago. I was home one evening and got a rather frantic call from the man who was in charge of the dining common. And they had served fish that night. And one of the women got to playing with her food and discovered these funny-looking things in the fish. And he wanted me to come over and identify them. Well, I knew what they were before I went. They were simply cysts of some of the roundworms that were in the fish that had been cooked and served. The woman was perturbed. The man who operated the dining common was perturbed, and I tried to assure him for several reasons there really was not any reason to do that. Number one, since the fish had been cooked, the parasite had been killed if it was still alive at that time. Number two, there are not any parasites, roundworm parasites, in fish that will infect human beings. And tried to assure him that the woman had simply gotten a little extra protein with her meal that night. I don't think this would have been a satisfying response in her mind. But at any rate, there are some things that are not, they may seem to be troublesome when in fact they really aren't. It simply is not possible for every fish that is caught to be inspected. And even if the worms are found, if you think the companies who are processing the fish are going to throw out the fish because they find these things, you think again. But it is the fact that these things are processed and either cooked or kept in refrigeration for a sufficient length of time so that they will not infect the human body, even if the worm could live in the human body. So these kinds of things, while they may not be very sort of distasteful to think about, they're really not very serious. But the trichina can be serious. Rats can be infected with the trichina. Pigs can be infected with the trichina. Humans can be infected with it. And it really doesn't take much infected meat to cause a serious infection in the human being. I remember reading that one of the common sources was imported sausage, and how in a tablespoonful of sausage there would be enough immature stages, eggs or larvae, when sexual reproduction occurred, to have several million parasites in the body, all of which is a good argument to be sure that you prepare your food well so that you simply do not allow this to be a problem. I also remember reading that one of the most common sources of infection were for rural school teachers and preachers who had been asked by their friends to sample some of their freshly prepared sausage, and often that was a source of infection. So if you're concerned about this, then be sure that you take precautions to be sure that your family or your person is not going to be infected. Cook it well or refrigerate it, freeze it long enough so that it's not going to be a problem. And in doing that, you should not have any qualms about eating meat, pork, or fish, or whatever.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.